Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and Katie Balls. So last night Boris Johnson set out his Brexit position with a letter to Donald Tusk. Katie, what did it say?
So Boris Johnson formalised what we'd been hearing already through various comments, Downing Street briefings. He told the EU the Irish border backstop must be scrapped completely, really, saying it was unviable, anti-democratic. He questioned whether it was in accordance with the Good Friday Agreement, if you looked at what it meant in terms of powers in Northern Ireland, and basically said it would have to go. You need alternative arrangements in order to get to an agreement to a Brexit deal that would pass the House of Commons. The reaction, quite quickly, even the unofficial reaction, was negative, shock. And Donald Tusk has since suggested that this is a no-go, basically saying that what Boris Johnson is suggesting might be not saying it, you know, straightly, but he's implicitly suggesting that there should be a hard border again in Ireland. So I think this is the reaction we, broadly speaking, expected from Brussels, where, you know, they weren't going to say, yes, let's ditch the backstop. Why didn't we think of that already? But it is just another sign of how uphill this is going to be. And also, if Boris Johnson wants to keep pushing the idea there might be a deal, he said at one point no deal was a million to one, the chances. But if he is going to keep pushing this idea, a deal as possible, I think it's going to get harder to do. We know he has meetings as the week goes on with EU leaders, but I think this could be the recurring theme is a no.
Fraser, last night Boris Johnson was on the phone to Leo Varadkar as well, shortly before this letter was released. The EU presumably is taking the lead from Ireland on this. What has the Irish reaction been, and do you think it's going to change at all?
Well, this is the big question. I mean, the letter didn't tell us anything we didn't already know. This is the what Philip Hammond calls the great pivot from Boris Johnson suggesting he might accept a modification to Theresa May's deal to him saying, no, I want the backstop gone, rewritten, which the EU says it won't do. Now, the EU says it wouldn't do this because it thinks this would throw the Irish under a bus, to use the metaphor that we quite often hear from Brussels. But, of course, the interesting thing there is if Ireland would change its mind on this, then the others would change as well. I recently spoke to an ambassador from another big EU country who was saying that, look, we are going to go along, really, with the flow here. You'll get the French, the Germans, and the Irish and the EU. Those are the four characters, and others will go along with it. Now, you can break the EU down to the French and German. They would quite like there to be a deal, but they don't want us to be seen to walk away from the Irish, because this whole negotiation has been the EU demonstrating to other smaller states that we, the EU, will stand by your side if you want to try to confront a bigger neighbour. So this is the politicisation of the talks, really. It's not just about the Irish border. This is about how the EU behaves with its smaller member states and whether the larger states would say to a country like Ireland, please ditch the backstop because we all want a deal. So it's now all down to Leo Varadkar. If he decides that it is time to be flexible on the backstop, then I think the rest of Europe will back him there. If he decides he wants to stick to his guns, and let's face it, it's pretty difficult for him to climb down from the position he's talked himself into, then I think it does become very difficult. But then, of course, you end up with the prospect of a hard border in November. The whole backstop is supposed to be in order to prevent a hard border if, after X many years of talks, there still isn't a trade deal. So, in other words, you would end up getting what you don't want just because you're not prepared to drop a mechanism that is supposed to stop it happening in 2 years' time. So it doesn't quite make sense. But does Leo Varadkar have the political space for manoeuvre? I'm not sure that he does. But one thing is for sure, now that Boris Johnson has committed in a letter to this hard backstop position of his that he wants it gone, very, very difficult for him to change one iota from this position and still keep his job as Prime Minister.
Katie, do you think this could be a starting position? I mean, I know Fraser's just said it's very hard for him to move from here, but in a negotiation, presumably you have to ask more and then expect to be haggled down. So could it be a starting position? Would he accept anything less?
But I think that is ultimately the big question. The reason it hasn't really dominated that much of the conversation, though, is because it just seems at the moment quite far away that the Brussels are even going to turn around and say, look, we don't want to ditch the backstop completely, but you know that five-year time limit we kept talking about under Theresa May and saying wasn't a goer? Maybe we'll look at that. That doesn't really feel as though that's the current mood. But I think were Brussels to turn around and look at something like a time limit, it would be difficult for Boris Johnson, because I think it would be a source of division in his cabinet and in the coalition that has supported him through his leadership. There are some who clearly think the problem is the backstop, but different degrees. So Geoffrey Cox, the Attorney General, he had a position where he, throughout under Theresa May, was trying to get certain changes, which were not as drastic as getting rid of the backstop completely. But are we getting to a point where I think Brussels are even willing to engage? I think that there is a sense amongst some of the EU leaders that Boris Johnson has gone for such a bold move, they almost see it as offensive. Now, in number 10, they don't think they're going to get any movement from Brussels until the Boris Johnson government does or doesn't survive the first 2 weeks of September. So when MPs return to Parliament and we're hearing about plans for a confidence vote, plans to try and legislate to do something similar to the Yvette Cooper bill. So once this group of cross-party MPs who want to stop No Deal have tried their various methods, if they didn't work, that's when figures in number 10 believe Brussels might start to move. But I think what would be tricky for the government is if Brussels came up with some sort of compromise change to the backstop, because there would be certain aides and ministers around Boris Johnson who would be encouraging him to take that. But we already know that to the European Research Group, and I say probably certain figures in that group, but Steve Baker, Marc Francois, they wouldn't even be happy if you ditched the backstop completely. They've made that quite clear. And we had Nigel Farage of the Brexit Party last night saying, oh, look at this letter Boris Johnson sent. This deal is actually worse, even if you get rid of the backstop. So were Boris Johnson to do what currently feels almost like the impossible and get rid of the backstop entirely, he would still need Labour votes, I think, to pass that. So I think it's uphill, whichever way you look at it.
You get the sense of the bar having been raised, actually, in Parliament for this. I mean, if we were having this conversation 2 months ago, I would have said that if the EU were to grant a simple exit clause, which is common in most international treaties, that would satisfy the Brady Amendment. Now, let's remember, the Brady Amendment got a majority in Parliament, so there is a majority for a modification to the backstop, or rather there was at the time. The big question is, has that now changed? Has Boris Johnson's election as Tory leader and Prime Minister meant that now people expect a bit more than they would have taken?
Do you think that's his own fault for talking about getting rid of the backstop completely at all in his campaign, when he didn't really have to make that promise?
No, and when he made it, I was really surprised. I was like, why are you making this policy so late on? Because remember, they were all competing to see who could talk hardest on the EU. And then at a relatively late stage, Boris Johnson drops his plan for a modification and says, no, I want to get rid of the whole thing. And when he first said it, I thought, surely he's just forgot himself and has said that in debate. Or maybe he's come up with a hardline position that he's going to drop when he goes into negotiations. But no, he is sticking to that relatively hardline position. And he's put it in black and white with his paper today. And he's made it very difficult for himself to compromise. Now, this is making me think that either Boris or those advising him don't actually want a deal that would involve more negotiation with the EU. Because if Theresa May's deal had passed, it would have meant at least 2 years of talks about a free trade deal. In other words, keeping Britain in this sort of punishment-beating position, because the EU has demonstrated it was using these negotiations to sort of choreograph a vibe where the Britain had behaved quite badly and it was really embarrassing itself, getting summoned to these meetings, told everything wasn't good enough. I wonder if Boris Johnson has thought to himself, even Theresa May's deal, if it were to pass Parliament, would mean another sort of 2 or 3 years of the Michel Barnier show, or the equivalent. That can only be bad for the government, for its majority. It's going to make the Brexit Party look better. In fact, the only way I'm going to get a majority is by ending this process completely, ejecting from the Michel Barnier show.
Just to push back on that a little bit, Fraser, you know, if it takes 2 years to do a free trade deal when you're leaving the EU with a deal, if we left without a deal, presumably we still, some people will still want a trade deal with Europe, and that wouldn't necessarily take less than 2 years either.
Oh, shit, it would probably take a lot more than 2 years, but there would not be this notion that Britain has signed one half of the Brexit deal and now has to sign the other. I think the British government would be free to pursue its own agenda there. And I think if your big problem is the Brexit Party, as I think the Conservative Party's big problem is, you'd want to do whatever you can to get rid of that Brexit Party. So this is the new test. What will make the Brexit Party go away? Now, getting Theresa May's deal with an exit clause, something I would have been happy to sign or support a couple of months ago, will probably not be enough to get rid of the Brexit Party. To get rid of that, you probably need to do more. And I think this is becoming the new test for the Tories. What do we need to do to puncture Farage, to shoot the Brexit Party fox. And I think the answer is getting rid of the backstop wholesale. So that's why I don't think this is a negotiating ploy. Mm. I don't think that if Boris Johnson wants to win the new election that we all know is inevitable because his majority is now down to one, so whether it's in November or whether it's in spring, to win that election, the Tories need to get rid of the Brexit Party. And therefore, whether it's a no-deal Brexit or whether it's a robust deal, the test will be whether it shoots the Farageist fox.
Yeah, speaking to figures in the Brexit Party, I think that even were Boris Johnson to get rid of the backstop, they see that as a way for their party to survive because they can point out all the other problems, all the other things they don't like about their arrangement. And I think the only thing that would really, I think, you speak to them, perhaps pose an existential threat would be a no-deal Brexit. Mm. But I also think were Boris Johnson to go for a no-deal Brexit, you might start to see Brexit Party candidates potentially standing down around the time of if it was an autumn election. I think it'd be in the air, but I think if they really genuinely thought a no-deal Brexit was happening or was about to happen, you would see at least some in the party perhaps considering the fact that this was why they joined, they now have this. Not everyone, but I think some might.
And Fraser, this week we're seeing a little bit more about what a no-deal Brexit might look like under Boris Johnson's government. Number 10 has confirmed that the Home Office will revoke freedom of movement on the first day of a no-deal Brexit. How do you feel about that?
I'd say pretty appalled, actually. This is exactly the sort of tone and language that Theresa May took to EU nationals, saying things that were bound to destabilise and make people worry. All of it unnecessary. And I have to say, it has given me pause, because I had Boris Johnson down as a Liberal. I thought the Vote Leave campaign was explicit of granting immediate reassurance to EU nationals. And in his first couple of hours as Prime Minister, Boris Johnson did exactly that. He granted immediate, unconditional assurance to EU nationals, and he also got rid of the net migration target.
And a pledge for illegal migrants to be...
Well, that's a good point, because he has previously spoken about granting amnesty to illegal immigrants, something I would be very supportive of. That's something I think The Spectator was supportive of, because as editor, he came up with a policy. And he's been advocating it through the pages of the magazine for some time. He did it as London mayor. We don't hear that now. And it does make me wonder if the driving force of this government isn't really Boris Johnson. If they feel the driving force are the political exigencies. We spoke earlier about how the Brexit strategy is being defined not by what Boris personally wants, but whatever the Tories think is needed to get rid of UKIP. Well, they're also thinking about a new election. This is very much this government. It does two things. It wants to do Brexit and prepare for an election. Now, the latter part means a lot of listening to focus groups. And now you can almost hear them thinking to themselves, these focus groups, they are quite determined about ending free movement. And by the way, that pulls very strongly amongst Remainers as well as Brexiteers in Britain. And if we say we want to bang up prisoners for even longer, these focus groups like it. And if we say we want to end free movement of people on the first day, by the way, piling a whole bunch of unnecessary bureaucracy on a project that's already difficult enough, they want to do that on the first day. How does that possibly make sense other than the fact that this goes down well with the focus groups? So we are beginning to see a question mark, in my head anyway, drawn over the liberal nature of this, what I had hoped was a liberal conservative project. And it's funny because I've spent a long time thinking, Theresa May, look at this liberal nature of her government. Look at this liberal. She never quite understood Brexit. She wasn't on board with it. She's having to overcompensate by snarling at EU migrants. And now I'm beginning to think, well, maybe Boris Johnson isn't going to remedy that in the way that people like me had hoped. Maybe he feels bound in by the same forces that Theresa May felt bound in by, namely the force that doing whatever they think needs to be done to win a general election.
Katie, this policy has been dubbed by some as a potential windrush for EU nationals. Do you think it's as drastic as that and it could be as disastrous?
Well, it depends what you take from the windrush crisis and hostile environment. If you look at it, lots of people say, well, that is an ideological policy which was out to get certain people, and that was the reason you had that. Others say Amber Rudd wasn't across her brief. The Home Office is a very large department and therefore it slipped her control. It wasn't something she was focused in on. I think that you have several potential problems here, but I think the most obvious is just the timing. I think there's 80 days now to go to the UK is supposed to leave the EU. And the idea that you'd be able to get a completely new immigration system in place, which wouldn't have errors in it, which wouldn't have people slip through the net. I think you could be ending up for a slightly shambolic system, which would mean that you could be prone to lots of errors, which did occur in Windrush.
Fraser and Katie, thanks very much. And you can subscribe, rate and review this podcast through all the usual routes. And I am contractually obliged to tell you about our £20 Amazon voucher, where you can get a free Amazon voucher if you go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. And you can also get 12 issues of The Spectator for just £12. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.